Hey, welcome to episode 97 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I am your host, Steven Stiles, and it's unbelievable that it's already time, actually, for episode 97, because it seems like we just turned out episode 96. But there is just so much to talk about this time of the year. Combination of the regular season winding down, the playoffs winding up, and of course, free agent signings of college players who their season has ended, and players that teams are apparently by their fans must go after, prospects and things like that. There is just anything and everything on the board for discussions these days. Anyways, that gets me started in a direction of, I saw a proposed trade the other day that makes about as much sense as somebody said they're going, hey man, you are going to have a really entertaining time watching flypaper dry. Because the trade makes no sense at all. The trade that I saw proposed literally had Cole Caulfield and Montreal's first round pick going to San Jose for their first pick overall in the draft. So that Montreal could then draft Macklin, Celebrini, center out of Boston. You know, I'm all for trades that make sense. I was perfectly fine with the Kirby Dach trade. I was perfectly fine with the Alex Newhook trade, even though some people were sitting there going, oh my God, we gave away the 31st and 37th picks in the 2023 draft to get Alex Newhook. He's unproven. Colorado obviously wasn't happy with him. Yeah, because he wasn't getting an opportunity because Colorado's roster was already stacked. So he wasn't going to get the minutes and the opportunity to showcase his skills, grow, and show what he can do. In Montreal, obviously, he's gotten that, and everybody, needless to say, has been really, really happy with the progress of both Kirby Dach and Alex Newhook. So I don't know if this proposed Macklin Celebrini trade is now everybody, as every season ends and every draft approaches, thinks Montreal has to have this blockbuster trade now, and somehow that makes the draft more exciting. I have no idea. All I know is there must be a lot of people suffering from some kind of coma, because this trade makes no sense. Why would the Montreal Canadiens trade a top five pick? Why would the Montreal Canadiens include their premier winger on their team and the only one capable of scoring 50 goals at the moment, a pure sniper, a young player, a player that's already gelled and formed chemistry with many players on the roster, most of the top six, as a matter of fact, not just Nick Suzuki, on a team that needs wingers and doesn't need centers right now? Montreal does not need a center. Montreal needs skilled wingers to go along with those centers that they have. And no doubt there's people going, well, what do you mean Montreal doesn't need a center? Well, to say that Macklin Celebrini, if he was traded for, would not be happy being a fourth line center for the Montreal Canadiens, that's the only position that they would have open to be able to give him an automatic position up. Nick Suzuki's already your captain, your number one center, your established leader, leads by example, is a captain of a quality of which Montreal and its organization has not seen since Bob Gainey and Guy Carbonneau. He's a combination of those two. Obviously, the time that he spent with Shea Weber and Brendan Gallagher has made him an unbelievable complete player, not only with his offensive instincts and defensive instincts that he already had as a player that he developed, but also with their wisdom, guidance, and knowledge, has made him the ultimate captain that Montreal has had in a long, long time. He's your undisputed number one. Now, at number two, you have Kirby Dach. Some people still have this fascination of, oh, but Dach looked so good as a winger on the Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki line. Dach is a center. He is a center all the way through. He's not a winger. Yeah, did he look good on the wing? Sure he did. He was also being eased into the lineup. He was also not being thrown to the wolves and have everything to deal with all at once and to grow into his position, something he never got in Chicago, which is one of the many reasons why he's excelled in Montreal. And I hope after this injury of this season that took him out 80 out of the 82 games, he comes back even better and never suffers any kind of injury again in his entire career, because I think he is going to be an amazing player for Montreal. Number three center, Owen Beck. Not on the team yet, but has wrapped up his junior career this year with Saginaw and has answered any and all remaining questions. Great defensive, great two-way, great complete 200-foot player, has turned down the offensive jets and shown that he can score as well. So there's your top three. They're not going anywhere. You already got him in the organization. What is the deal with Macklin Celebrini? Now, if there was a all-star winger, I'd say, okay, maybe that's it. And by the way, anybody that says, oh, well, we'll just move Nick Suzuki to left wing and we'll pop in Macklin Celebrini on that line as a number one center. Yet, really? You think your captain's going to be satisfied with that after everything he's achieved, everything he's given the team, everything he's done, and the leadership he's shown, you don't think he or his agent are going to sit there and go, you know what? You can trade me the hell out of here. I'm done. He has earned the right to be the number one center. He plays every game, leaves it all on the ice, never takes a day off, and leads by example. There is no way, come hell or high water, that a player like that is going to sit there and go, oh yeah, well, allow me to just be pushed aside. Yeah, okay. And by the way, Macklin Celebrini is not a better center than Nick Suzuki is. And I would go so far to say he's not a better center than Kirby Dach is or will become. Is he a more offensive threat than Owen Beck? Maybe. To be determined. Owen Beck is a hell of a complete player and a great second round pick by the Canadiens at the 33rd selection overall in his draft. I think everybody's going to be very happy when Owen Beck arrives in Montreal, without a doubt. But this is exactly the kind of trade A, the organization doesn't need to make because they already have centers. B, would have a locker room disastrous effect and a roster ripple effect. I mean, if your goal is to tear apart the roster, tear apart the team, tear it back down and start all over again because everybody just wants to see a perennial rebuild or bottom feeder team, okay, I suppose that could be a drive to making this trade. But there isn't a whole hell of a lot that makes sense here at all without really, really reaching for something. This is just an insane trade proposal. So let's have yet another discussion that I think obviously there's a lot of people that haven't bothered to do their homework regarding with. And we've talked about this on several episodes, but apparently not enough. Apparently there needs to be more discussion on this because people apparently aren't aware of what Montreal already has in the pipeline and the success that they've had drafting and getting their team positioned for and set up for future success and continuous success, long-term success. I'm going to start in goal, all right? This year, you had the whole argument of, oh my God, the three goaltender situation is killing Montreal. They have to get rid of one of them. I've already argued that point. I think that was nothing but beneficial for Sam Montembeau and Caden Primo, who are now your two starting goaltenders, who are both younger than Jake Allen. I think soaked up his wisdom, knowledge, experience, and advice like a sponge, and will serve them well through their careers. Whether they turn out to be the long-term goaltenders of Montreal's future determines or will be determined by a lot of different things. I think, quite honestly, when it comes to Sam Montembeau, the new contract that he has signed, which gives him an annual value contract of $3.15 million, will be his last one in Montreal. Because I think Caden Primo is already knocking on the door. I think Caden Primo, as I've said, the team plays differently in front of him. They just, I think, have a greater confidence. Not that Sam Montembeau is a bad goaltender. Like I said, he has stolen many games and has played beyond his expectations or the expected level of management and has been a good, pleasant surprise. But I think Primo, out of those two, will eventually become the number one goaltender. You've already got Jakub Dabysh in the AHL this year, who has evolved immensely and quickly over the year. Started off kind of not looking comfortable, looking out of place, and has settled in and done very well, and has also stolen a lot of games as the season's gone along, gained confidence, gained experience, and is a totally different goaltender right now than he was with the season started. That doesn't even include your Jacob Fowlers out of Boston of the NCAA, who had an incredible first year and rookie year. And no, to the people that want to sign him and already bring him to the NHL or the AHL, no, let him grow in Boston for at least 3 years in the NCAA. You've got Evgeny Volokhin in the Russian League, who's just tearing it up. And both he and Fowler, along with Quentin Miller, who also had a good year in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League, were all draft picks in the 2023 draft and are the future of Montreal's goaltending. And I believe that the two future goaltenders will probably likely come down to Jacob Fowler and Evgeny Volokhin as the one and two, which is unfortunate because I think Jakub Dabysh is a phenomenal goaltender as well. So Montreal is nicely set up in goal. Now let's move to the defense. And before I leave goaltending, what are these people now that it's down to Caden Primo and Sam Montembeau now want to pick apart Primo's game? He's had tremendous growth this year. And has everybody forgotten? He was a seventh round pick, 199th overall in the 2017 draft. He has already exceeded expectations of a seventh round pick. Most seventh round picks never make it. A lot of them never even make it out of their junior team to the AHL. Some make it to the AHL. Even fewer make it to the NHL. I just don't get the people that want to pick players apart. Everybody now is nitpicking Caden Primo's game. Well, we're not sure. He has shown a lot, and he is on a uptick that is not going to look back at any time, and he's playing really, really well. Now, on to the defense. Apparently, people have forgotten how much talent they have there. Let's begin with what I consider to be a pretty obvious starting six, unless something goes really, really wrong with any of these players. And I'm just going to name six. I'm not saying who's going to be the first pairing, second pairing, because I think it's an awesome starting six. David Reinbacher, Lane Hutson, Logan Mailou, Caden Gooley, Jaden Struble, Arbor Jack guy, and the seventh defenseman, Jordan Harris. That's how deep they are. Your seventh defenseman is Jordan Harris, which would be probably a top five defenseman on almost any other team in the NHL. He's smart, rarely makes a mistake, rarely is caught out of position, has played beyond his years since he entered the NHL. That's a hell of a starting six with a seventh in reserve already. On top of that, you have Adam Engstrom, Bogdan Koshikov, William Trudeau, Justin Barron, David Savard, Mike Matheson, Matthias Norlander, Dmitry Kostenko, Daniel Sobolev, Petteri Nurmi, Miguel Torgany. Take your pick. That is unbelievable depth. And many of those people that I mentioned after the top seven, again, unless something happens to end a career, unless something goes fatally wrong in their development of that starting six plus the seventh and reserve defenseman, none of those guys may make it to Montreal. They have that much depth on defense. Now, let's look at the forward group that everybody apparently is so dissatisfied with. Oh, Montreal needs more elite talent. All right, that's kind of intriguing, because what I'm looking at ices an existent level of talent better than most teams in the league when it's all on the roster and comes together. And I think that's the disconnect for a lot of people. I think a lot of people are just sitting there going, well, you know, we're not in the playoffs yet, and we've got Caulfield, we've got Doc, we've got Newhook, we've got Slavkovsky, and we've got Suzuki. Well, let's see. Slavkovsky, again, is only 19 in his second year after having his rookie season shortened. Caulfield had a shoulder injury that he's coming back from last year. Doc has been out all but two games of this year and won't be coming back. Alex Newhook was gone for an extended period of time. So yeah, they haven't been able to be together to do everything that they can and gel as much as they can. But when they've been together in the later parts of the regular season, which you're now watching, surprise, they've beaten Colorado, they've beaten Florida, they've beaten a lot of good teams and look really, really good. It's a process. And in addition to those players, yet to arrive for full-time jobs has been Joshua Roy, Owen Beck, Philip Massar, Sean Farrell. There's still a lot of people coming. And I don't get in this and during this process how people still doubt the likes of Jeff Gordon, Kent Hughes, Adam Nichols. Adam Nichols is a tremendous, not only development coach, talent developer, also a recognizer of innate skill. And for that matter, so is Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon. But let's just focus on Adam Nichols for a second. Does everybody not remember his comments about Owen Beck, Sean Farrell, Lane Hutson? Really? For him to be impressed to the level that he is with those players and tag them as special players with the amount of talent he's worked with, seen, and developed over his career, as he's known as one of the best, if not best, player development people in the league, makes a statement that apparently blew by a lot of people's heads and out of their minds. He doesn't make statements like that just because he works for somebody. He doesn't make statements like that to overblow the egos of or lie to players. He tells it like it is. And for him to make those statements, that is a stand up and take notice remark because of how much talent he's evaluated and because of how much he excels and is recognized around the league. So I'm going to put the offense into sections. We're going to start off with a group that I'm going to call the top six. Line one either consists of Cole Caulfield on the right, Nick Suzuki at center, or Juraj Slavkovsky on the left wing. Or Joshua Roy on the right wing, Nick Suzuki at center, Cole Caulfield on the left. Line two, Alex Newhook at right wing. I know a lot of people, Alex is a center. Alex has looked good as a fill-in at center. I'm not saying he's not a center, but he is an exceptional winger. And since he can play both and has the speed, agility, and offensive skills that he does, well, it's kind of like all the talent on defense. defense, there's just going to be guys that are really good that aren't going to make it. The center positions are full. So Alex Newhook is your right wing, Kirby Dach is your center, and Juraj Slafkovský is your left wing. Or if that doesn't work and Slafkovský's on the first line with Suzuki, Alex Newhook's your right winger, Kirby Dach's your center, Joshua Roy is your left wing. But there's your top six. Everybody's been really impressed with Roy, and the other five, Caulfield, Suzuki, Slafkovský, Newhook, and Dach, are legitimate and better than most top six talent in the league. Those are the first two lines that Montreal ices. Here's a top three line that everybody wished that they had the depth of. How about your third line, Philip Massar on the right wing, Owen Beck at center, Sean Farrell on the left. That is a hell of a third line with a lot of offensive skill, a lot of tenacity, complete 200-foot players, players that can play patient, players that can take advantage. There's a lot of talent in that third line. And now take a look at the options that Montreal has for a fourth line. With the first three lines, and I'm just going to go over them one more time before I get to the fourth line. Roy, Suzuki, Caulfield, Newhook, Dach, Slafkovský. Flip Slafkovský and Roy. Either way you want to do it. Doesn't bother me. Massar, Beck, and Farrell. There's your top nine. You're done. So now we've got your goaltenders, top six defensemen, plus a reserve extra, top nine, top three NHL lines on your roster. Fourth line. Here's how well Jeff Gordon and Ken Hughes have drafted in 2022 and 2023, and how well Mark Bergevin, for all the flack and crap that everybody wants to give him, hang him from a tree in center of town, and oh my God, he's horrible. He was a hell of a drafter of talent. Bergeron's biggest and most largest problem that was obvious was the fact he lacked the ability within the organization to have proper player development in place. But as far as drafting the talent, he drafted a lot of good people in 2019, 2020, 2021. Yeah, did he hit every draft he was there? Nobody does. Stop with the unrealistic. Yeah, but he had some drafts too that he totally missed. I mean, he really should have drafted Brady Tkachuk over Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Maybe, but at the time, they were center depleted. That's why he made that move. Did he reach for Kotkaniemi? Should Kotkaniemi even have been a top five? No. No, he shouldn't have. But he was also a reach pick, and he was a need pick, and he didn't have any talent around him like the younger players have benefited from now, and certainly the wrong coaches. Because if he had had Martin St. Louis, I'll bet we'd be having a different conversation about Jesperi Kotkaniemi. But let's not get off the topic. So here's your options with how well the organization has drafted and collected talent. At center, you have Elias Andersson, Lucas Condotta, Jared Davidson, Xavier Simoneaux, or Riley Kidney. At left wing, you have Florian Jacki, you have Michael Pezzetta, Emil Heinemann. I'm going to say Jordan Harris because I think he could actually, with his ability, skating, and on-ice vision, could be a left winger on the fourth line. Riley Kidney can also play left wing. Vincent Zrore, Rhett Pitlick, Cedric Guidin. At right wing, you've got Josh Anderson. That might be a hard pill to swallow at $5.5 million per season. Brendan Gallagher, $6.5 million. That's going to even be harder to swallow. Joel Armia, who's been very comfortable already there. The newly acquired Jacob Perreault, Anad Durando, acquired from New Jersey, Blake Biondi, who can also play center or right wing, Alexander Gordon, and hey, what about Jesse Ylönen, who was kind of a lost player, also didn't perform really well either, so didn't garner any confidence in coaches to do much else with him, but he's also an option at right wing. Think of all those options. And I think out of every one of those players I mentioned, Florian Jacki is going to have a hell of an upside. I think he's going to impress Montreal just like his brother Arbor did. I think they stole those two players. And again, before anybody wants to beat down Mark Bergevin, remember he was the guy smart enough to sign him as a free agent walk-on. But if you want to make a statement trade, if you want to get a player of immediate impact, if you want to get a player that can gel with and literally flawlessly transition into the team, Macklin Celebrini isn't that player. How about guaranteeing the type of talent you pick by, if you want a package, that first round pick that you pick picked up from Winnipeg along with your own, and you aren't quite high enough after the season and from the draft lottery to guarantee that you could select Russian right winger Ivan Demidov, okay, position yourself for him. Or sit where you're at and grab a Caden Lindstrom, a Barkley Keaton, future depth, future styles of players with hockey IQ, performance levels that you've come to expect and demand in Montreal that they'll meet that with. If you want another pure sniper, Cole Yzerman. But remember, like Cole Caulfield has surprised a lot of people. For as many people that want to put him down or voice concern over the fact, oh, his offensive numbers are not what they should have been, he did not have the offensive season that we thought he should have. His game's evolved. Nobody ever thought he'd become more than a one-trick pony or a more complete player he has this year. Now, am I a fan of that? I would rather see the guy shoot every time he gets the puck and just drill the net of every team he faces, because I really want to see the guy not only score 50, I want to see him have at least one season where he shatters all single season goal scoring records by a Montreal Canadian. That would be fantastic. If you want to know a player like that, then Cole Yzerman. But Demidov, Lindstrom, Caton, or Yzerman are the players I would be going after. And if you can get two out of three of those guys, get them. That is just bolstering your organization and its depth and its abilities and its long-term success in a way that no other will equal. Moving on to another article of interest that I saw is, oh, three players on the Canadiens roster that have to prove themselves next year. First one listed, Josh Anderson. I don't think there's anything else for anybody to discover, including him. Look, he is a big, powerful, great skating forward that has never gelled. It just has not worked out for him in Montreal. What you see is what you get. Either they have to trade him in the offseason and leverage him to somebody who just loves him, like John Tortorella in Philadelphia, so Philadelphia might give Montreal a little bit more than another random team, or hope that he has a better offensive year next year, giving him and putting him in any position to do and achieve that so that they can trade him at the deadline. The unfortunate thing is I think the time has passed where they're going to really clean up for Josh Anderson. There were trades on the table last year that could have netted Montreal multiple first round picks. I wish they would have taken every one of them, because now at best you're probably looking at a second round pick as compensation for him, and that is a far cry of what you could have gotten before. That's unfortunate. The next player on that list that is listed that has to prove themselves is Caden Primo. What? He's already proven himself this year. He has entrenched himself already as the solid number two. As I've already covered to a relentless level, the best games of the year up until recently, he had goaltended in every one of them. Detroit, Anaheim, Buffalo, Columbus. Two out of those four games, which were shutouts. Sam Montembeau has had great games recently, so now he's in that discussion as well. But for all these people, oh, Caden Primo has to prove himself. No, Caden Primo's doing just fine. Caden Primo has redefined himself, rediscovered his game, has gained a level of confidence that he hasn't had before, has worked again with the Adam Nichols and all the other coaches on the development squad of the Montreal Canadiens and the staff. Caden Primo is just fine. There's nothing he has to prove to anybody next year, other than the fact that he can continue to play more games and plays at a minimal 32, probably 41. I hope Montreal literally in 2024-2025 splits the goaltenders exactly 41 games apiece. Whether it be one plays all road games and one plays all home, they play a combination of, whatever it is, I hope they get equal time because they both deserve it. And even more bizarre, number three on that list was defenseman Jordan Harris. Excuse me? He hasn't looked out of step or out of place since he's joined the league directly from Northeastern University of the NCAA. He's consistent. He's calm. He's a great skating defenseman. He's got a great first step. He can join the rush. He's got a solid transition game. He's got a great first pass. He has exceeded expectations. What is it with these people? Oh no, the Caden Primos and the Jordan Harrises have a lot to prove next year. Not really. The only thing Jordan Harris has to worry about is the numbers numbers game because of how much incredible talent Montreal has in young defensemen. And again, if I had no room for him on defense and could hardly play him as a defenseman, I'd put him on the fourth line as a left winger. He's that good. Moving on to other topics, it was great to see Nick Suzuki score his 30th goal against Philadelphia and set a new goal scoring mark for a regular season accomplishment. It was also great to see former Canadian prospect Ryan Poehling, who has found a home in Philadelphia. For some reason, when players don't work out in Montreal or draft picks don't live up to others' expectations, not their own or the team's, but others, which I'm trying to figure out how they consider themselves that important or even relevant to begin with, people were like booing him out of town, couldn't wait to get rid of him. I'm glad he's found a home in Philadelphia. He looks really comfortable, and I wish him nothing but the best and hope he has a long career. In that same game that Nick Suzuki scored his 30th goal, it was great to see Juraj Slafkovský set an organizational point record total as a teenager. So yet another reason people can stop attacking him and questioning him and realize his tremendous growth this year, success, and the long-term success he'll have with the organization and the cornerstone that he'll be with the team. Not to mention the fact, again, want to hear from all those Shane Wright people that thought Montreal should have drafted him instead. I think those are crickets I hear in the background. Jumping topics to something totally different, the Trois Rivières Lions might not end up being a Montreal affiliate team much longer, as apparently they have ran into financial issues paying their rent on time. Apparently, from what I am reading, they're like 3 months behind on their rent to the city, so Montreal may lose their ECHL team, and they're not the only one. There's other organizations out there, such as Toronto, who may experience the same thing. Yet another head-scratching article of, oh, here's some players that Montreal has to sign. I always love articles like that. Who Montreal has to sign? On that list, Oliver Kapanen, prospect center, Adam Engstrom, prospect defenseman, Luke Tush, left-wing prospect out of the NCAA, center Jared Davidson, who signed an AHL contract coming out of Seattle in the Western Hockey League last year, is up for another contract, and Lane Hutson. Got to sign them all immediately. Well, the obvious one on that list is Lane Hutson. Montreal will certainly sign them, and if he's ready to come out of the NCAA and doesn't think there's anything else for him to learn, his coaches in the NCAA feel that way. Montreal feels that way as an organization. Ken Hughes will get him signed. There's no question about that. The next one on the list, and I'm going to work my way backwards because Lane Hutson was the fifth one listed. Jared Davidson was the fourth one listed, and I think he is the fourth line center of choice that I would put on the roster, and had an excellent exhibition training camp and rookie camp last year in Montreal. Didn't look out of place at all. He is your classic late bloomer. He was a fifth round selection in his respective draft. Montreal, quote unquote, as some people like to say, took a flyer on him, and he did really, really well, and is developing really, really well. As for Luke Tush, he's had a very rocky college career. This year, his senior year has been by far his best, but there's still some consistency issues in his game. The enticement, if you will, or the intrigue of him is he's a 6'2", 200-pound plus left wing prospect, which immediately will garner him the title of, oh, he's a power forward in the waiting. Maybe. We'll see. But the better option with him, as again, Montreal has a lot of prospect depth coming, might just be to trade him to Buffalo because his brother plays there. Leverage that in a trade and get a return second round pick for him, which is what Montreal used of its own to draft him, and just move on. Because in the world of left wings, if you ask me who I would rate higher on Montreal's prospect list, Luke Tush or Florian Jacki, it's not even close. Florian Jacki wins, hands down. As for defensive prospect Adam Engstrom, solid defenseman. He's got great skill. I think he's going to be a really good defenseman in the NHL. But again, you've got the six ahead of him that I've already mentioned. Unless something happens to one of them, unless he's still in Montreal's system and one of them go to free agency and don't come back, he's just not going to fit in. So leverage him in a trade and get potentially a first round pick for him, because he's just one of too many at the same position right now that Montreal already has better than. And it's not a check mark against him. He's really good. I think he's a good talent. I think he's a strong, great talent potentially. But Montreal just just isn't going to have room for him. And finally, Oliver Kapanen. Finally, this year, kind of similar to Luke Tush, Oliver Kapanen finally is putting together a good season. Finally, he's taking on a greater role, greater responsibility. That's not enough for me to go, wow, gotta have. Again, if you ask me if I had to have Oliver Kapanen or Jared Davidson, I'm taking Jared Davidson, hands down. So maybe the Oliver Kapanens, Adam Engstroms, Luke Tushes, and people like that are trade bait that can continue to keep Montreal flush with draft capital, or can be packaged for that person that somebody's convinced Montreal needs, and they are prospects that in Montreal are going to be really good, but probably won't make it because of the depth and the amount of great prospects Montreal has, but would be top prospects to another organization. So they would be willing to give up draft capital of a round, meaning first or second round, that they normally wouldn't, because those players are that good and are probably ready to go, but there just isn't going to be room for them in Montreal. But my question, especially of the European prospects that are mentioned in this article, unless Montreal is going to lose their rights to retain them, there's no rush to sign them. And as the perfect topic to wrap up episode 97 of the Hockey Free For All podcast with, it would not be right if I didn't conclude with what is the big drama all about regarding Carey Price's Montreal home has finally been sold. Did anybody on this planet really think he was coming back, especially as a player? I mean, I would love him to. Hate to see a player of his ability, his tenure, his amount of effort and game and everything about himself that he's given to the game and to the organization along the way and in the way that it has. But he's never been able to fully regain the flexibility, the angularity, or the mechanics needed to return to the NHL. I've said all along, I just wish for the guy he recovers to a level that allows him to fully functional and do anything that he wants with his wonderful family and be with them. That's first and foremost of importance. Would I have loved for him to come back? Absolutely. He was a really, really good goaltender. Would I have loved to see him get another shot to win a cup? Absolutely. Would that have been a perfect way to cap off his amazing career? Absolutely. But enough with the drama. Oh my God, now it's officially over. His house is sold. It's been officially over for a couple of years. Let's be honest, two players that were never coming back after playing through the ravenous injuries that they had, Carey Price, Shea Weber, neither one of them were ever coming back. They gave it all. They gave one last hurrah. And again, I can't help but point to that news conference at the end of the Florida Panthers game in 2022 when he said, and I say he, Carey Price, at the microphone, sitting down with the press, at the end of the game, made the following comment, and I quote, "If this was my last game that I play, I'm okay." That pretty much said it all. I mean, maybe that was too hidden. Maybe that was too well disguised in somebody's mind, but that pretty much said it all. Hey, just wanted to let you know, I'm not coming back. I know I can't. That's basically what he said. I don't understand the nostalgic trip down memory lane or the outright desire to hold on to hope. Oh, he's coming back. Believe me, if he could, he would. He loves the game. That's very apparent. The guy is amazingly passionate about the game. There's no questioning that. Never has anybody questioned Carey's passion for the game, love for the game, excellence at what he demands of himself, or anything else. He's done. Let it go and move on. And if you want to hold on to hope for something, hopefully he will remain within the organization as a scout in the Western Hockey League, specifically of goaltending talent for the future, or he'll be added to the development coach and can share his wisdom and experience with goalies of the future for the Montreal Canadiens, which would be invaluable as he is a modern day current NHL player, knows what it takes, knows the hardships, knows what it puts stress on the human body and to the degree of it, and that is invaluable. On that note, thanks for tuning into episode 97 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I'm your host, Steven Stiles. Have an amazing week.